I want to thank you for joining me here at the Center at University Park for the annual State of the City Address. Thank you, Dr. Lacey, and thank you, LaGenia. That was very, very beautiful. Well, I'm proud to have you singing that Star-Spangled Banner for us today. I also want to thank my family for being here, my wife, Joellen, and my twin sons, Robert and John Mark. Now, somehow they escaped from school to be able to join me here. Thank you. I want you to know that I'm really pleased to take this opportunity to show off to our citizens this beautiful new facility, a new community center right here in the heart of Little Rock on 12th Street, just off University Avenue. More important than the bricks and mortar of this building is the impact that the programming services within these walls have on the lives of the people, both young and old, who take advantage of what we have to offer in this facility. Such services as computer training, aerobics, ceramics, arts and crafts, floral design, even Zumba classes. I don't know if our manager's leading those Zumba classes or not. But these services stimulate both the mind and the body and offer a wonderful environment, a community of place, and an opportunity to engage others in meaningful conversation. The quality of this building was substantially improved because of additional funding that we received for capital improvements through the 2011 successful sales tax election. So it offers me an opportunity to use this forum to highlight our progress so far. These highlights include a variety of road, drainage, and capital improvement projects in all of our wards. In Ward 1, over the next several months, Louisiana Street from Markham to Roosevelt Road will be resurfaced. Wright Avenue from Martin Luther King to Chester Street will be resurfaced. And we have already completed the major street improvements and the extension of 9th Street from Interstate 30 all the way to Bond Street. I know that Director Hendricks is becoming more and more accustomed to the bike lanes on the newly resurfaced South Main Street, and I want you to know that she has promised to ride a tandem bicycle with me. I don't know where she is right now, but it's out there, and I have other witnesses to it as well. And I'll tell you that I, as well as the entire downtown community, can hardly wait for this experience to occur. In Ward 2, Director Ken Richardson and myself are really looking forward to cutting the ribbon on the new 12th Street station this summer. It represents a $12 million public investment in Midtown, south of Interstate 630, giving this area new opportunities for reinvestment of both capital dollars and human capital, all a part of the 12th Street corridor plan. The city will also be spending nearly $1 million on street reconstruction and drainage for the Woodson Road project in Ward 2 as well. In Ward 3, City Director Stacy Hurst has recognized the vast improvements that roundabouts make in traffic coordination and safety. A roundabout and street reconstruction has been built at Sherrill Road, and a roundabout will be built at the busy intersection of Cavanaugh, Pine Valley, and McKinley Streets. In Ward 4, the need for a West Little Rock substation has long been recognized by Director Brad Cazort and myself as an important expansion of our police department in the western portions of our city. The redevelopment of the prominently located Pankey Community Center building into a police substation is a vast improvement of our resources and will give our police department improved response times, meeting place for community activities, and easy access to residential subdivisions off of Highway 10 and Chenal Boulevard. In Ward 5, City Director Lance Hines and Director Cazort, who used to have portions of this area of Rowling Road in his ward, along with the adjacent neighborhoods, are elated with the new fire station number 23 that's located there. This $2.8 million LEED facility represents a much-needed tool to improve public safety and the measures so important to keep our citizens safe in western Little Rock. Director Hines has also helped to coordinate neighborhood desires to include construction of a new a roadway connecting LaMarche Drive north to Taylor Loop Road. Here in Ward 6, not only does Vice Mayor Wright enjoy this new $3 million facility that we're in, but this year we'll also witness the groundbreaking of a new $6 million West Central Community Center on Colonel Glenn Road and John Barrow Road, which will also receive substantial roadway streetscape improvements. In Ward 7, B.J. Wyrick has led the charge in community efforts to build a new fire station in Ward 7, and land has been purchased on Stagecoach Road. And likewise, a much-needed widening of Yarberry Lane will be completed from Chico Road. These are but a handful of the street and drainage and capital improvements that will be occurring this year. All in all, the city will be spending $177 million on street drainage projects over the remaining 9 years out of the 10 years of our capital improvement projects plan. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Director Dean Kampiris' continued development of our iconic Riverfront Park. The Sculpture Park is outstanding, and with the development of a new Broadway bridge and the Robinson Auditorium renovation, new uses on the western end of the park are being imagined. Likewise, the eastern end of the park, with the island in front of the Clinton Center, will be developed thanks to a partnership between the city and the Sturgis Foundation. With all these things occurring under the state-of-the-art LED lighting of the three bridges over the Arkansas River lights, to say that things look bright in Little Rock's future is an understatement. Director Gene Fortson has been instrumental in chairing the Finance Committee of the Advertising and Promotion Commission, lending his advice on the Robinson Conference Center and auditorium renovation, and providing valuable board insight to the Little Rock Municipal Airport Commission. And Director Joan Adcock has been a guiding force to our Animal Services Division, resulting in the outstanding efforts of increasing animal adoptions and rescue placements to 2,592 in calendar year 2013. Truly a rewarding and heartwarming element of a wonderful program that we have at our Animal Village. On the economic development front, the newly opened Bass Pro Shop announced plans and the announced plans for an 80-store shopping outlet mall, the Gateway Town Center, should provide a real economic booster shot to our city. The year 2013 saw 250 new jobs created and $79 million in capital investments committed through our contract and partnership with the local Chamber of Commerce. Since 2005, this compact has created over 4,990 jobs and has been created with a new $200 million annual payroll and $986 million spent on new capital investment. Engage Labs announced the opening of a new analytics innovation center in downtown Little Rock with a commitment to hire a minimum of 35 knowledge-based employees with salaries averaging above $100,000 annually. Dassault Falcon Jet announced a new $60 million expansion for their new 5X jet. MISO, an energy grid company, announced a new Southern Operations Center here in Little Rock, creating 50 highly skilled jobs with average salaries of $85,000 yearly. Wellspun opened a new $100 million small diameter steel pipe manufacturing facility at the port. And Fidelity National Information Services announced an addition of 200 new jobs with an additional $3 million in capital invested into the Little Rock facility. This new facility will house their North American sales and marketing and finance divisions. It's been quite a year for economic development activity in the city of Little Rock. With Walmart's announcement of their commitment to buy an additional $50 billion in U.S.-made products over the next 10 years, I want you to know that we will be aggressively working to market our region for those new facilities and the suppliers who will be relocating to the United States. As for city operations, the Little Rock Police Department, by the end of this year, should be back up to full strength. This past year, we added 63 new police officers, and under the leadership of Chief Stuart Thomas, the department has developed and is implementing reorganized operational programs, emphasizing crime prevention, and is implementing a reduction of the crime in our city. The police department's crime analysis section helps to focus the department's quiet nights and night strike units where they are most needed in an effort to deter violent crime. Operation Phoenix helps ramp up the decision-making process on where our mobile units should be emphasized. And 15 new surveillance cameras have been deployed in an effort to deter criminal activity. Our fire department is continuing its efforts at national accreditation and has done an excellent job on public awareness on how to best serve our citizens. The fire department has ranked exceedingly well in all categories from fire response to natural disasters. Additional code officers have been hired, and our new communications tower and 911 upgrades have been completed, connecting over 5,000 users throughout the county to our system. One of my long-term objectives was accomplished this past year with the opening of Jericho Way, the city's day resource center. We are continuing to improve the programming of this facility to not only include food, clothing, identification, VA assistance, and referral, but also case management, medical, and transportation for potential employment opportunities. 75 to 100 people a day are served with our staff picking up homeless in both Little Rock and North Little Rock. I want to thank North Little Rock for partnering with us on this $500,000 investment to improve the lives of the less fortunate in our city. I also want to specifically thank Assistant City Manager Brian Day and Homeless Coordinator Jimmy Pritchett for their efforts in getting this facility open. It is my hope this year to improve our efforts on job placement and additional medical facilities and transitional housing alternatives. As part of this effort, I am happy to announce that Little Rock is one of 17 cities that is participating in a national effort led by the National League of Cities that challenges cities to meet President Barack Obama's goal to end veteran homelessness by 2015. Each city, including Little Rock, will engage in a friendly competition with another comparable city to be the first to end chronic homelessness. And while Little Rock has not been paired yet with another city, I hope to announce our friendly competition partner within the next few weeks. I'm also very pleased that our longtime partner, the Home Depot and Home Depot Foundation, have continually supported the efforts to eliminate chronic veterans homelessness in our cities across the nation. Our nation's veterans bravely served our country and made sacrifices to do so. And while serving, the skills and leadership qualities they learn make them valuable assets to communities and businesses. However, as we all know, veterans and their families can also face major challenges, including housing, unemployment, and disability. Home Depot has pledged to ensure that every veteran has a safe place to call home, and they have committed over $80 million over 5 years to this effort. In addition, Home Depot associates are committing their own time and talents to make a difference for veterans and local communities, including the city of Little Rock. My goal is to end veteran homelessness by making sure that all veterans have a home and by working with our partners and with the assistance of our homeless VA drop-in center. Under the leadership and guidance of Dr. Estella Morris, I am confident that together we can end veterans homelessness here in Little Rock by the end of 2015. On the sustainability front, several new ventures have been tackled. Soon, we will open a new CNG, or compressed natural gas, fueling station on Interstate 30, which will not only fuel our own vehicles, but will also be available to the CNG traveling public. The city was proud this past year to receive the EPA Climate Showcase Ambassador Award for the HEAL program, which is an innovative way for employees to finance energy efficiency upgrades in their homes. Incidentally, the EPA selected the city's grants division for the best overall grant administration reporting and replication efforts from a field of 52 grantees. So congratulations is warmly extended to our finance director, Sarah Linehan, and our grants manager, Karen Curry, for this excellent recognition. Our plans for sustainable improvements to water quality brought the deputy secretaries of HUD, the Department of Transportation, and the EPA to Little Rock to review and highlight the work that's being done on Main Street, which began, as was mentioned, with the Greening of America's Capitals grants, followed by a National Endowment of the Arts grant for the Main Street Creative Corridor, and now an EPA-funded grant administered through the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission, which will allow the sustainable practices to be built. This $1.9 million construction project will further transform downtown Little Rock. As you know, this past month, the City Board passed a multifamily recycling ordinance directed at apartment complexes located in the city. This expansion of our recycling program will further the city's goal of reducing solid waste collection and increasing the lifespan of our landfill. Recycling also offers significant benefits to our environment and will bring increased economic opportunity to our community. A recent update provided by Waste Management, which operates Little Rock's new single-stream recycling program, has estimated participation rates have increased to more than 80% since the project began in April of 2012. Similarly, the annual amount of recycling collected and has doubled to over 10,200 tons compared to approximately 5,500 tons at the end of the old program. Little Rock residents have dramatically increased their participation in the city's new single-stream recycling program, contributing to substantial environmental protection. I want to tell you what that diversion means in some more practical terms. Diverting 10,000 tons of solid waste from the landfill towards recycling is the equivalent of saving 47.9 million kilowatt hours of electricity, growing 703,528 trees for 10 years, saving 3,076,019 gallons of gasoline, and removing the annual emissions of 5,717 cars from the atmosphere. By adding all apartment complexes with 100 units or more, we will be diverting several additional tons from landfills in the county. The ordinance passed by the Board of Directors will apply to over 19,485 apartment units, which represents 83% of all the apartments in Little Rock. I'm encouraged that several other apartment complexes with less than 100 units have indicated that they are going to voluntarily comply with the ordinance as well. We should also mention our business community in this context. Several voluntary efforts are underway for recycling in many of our downtown high-rise buildings. I am familiar with the recycling efforts of the Wright Lindsay Jennings Law Firm, who really have led the way on this effort with the entire Bank of America building participating, as well as those of the Rose Law Firm. Their efforts, committed to recycling, cut their annual waste disposal bill by nearly 65%, saving the firm thousands of dollars a year, and importantly, in the first 6 months of the year, diverting over 5 tons of waste material from the landfill to be placed in the recycling stream to be reused again. Several other businesses and commercial enterprises are also recycling, and I want to commend all of them for their efforts. Quality of life amenities are critical to a successful city. And in light of that, I am resolved to work with our citizens and adjacent landowners to complete the Arkansas River Trail. This year, we hope to complete the eastern and western portions of the trail adjacent to the Packet House and Dillard's headquarters, making pedestrians and bicycling safer and more enjoyable. This year, we'll also be seeing an improvement in our code enforcement efforts and in our demolition and housing departments. City Manager Bruce Moore is committed to providing additional personnel to reduce the response time on weed lot cutting. And during this past year, 13 code officers have been hired. And all of the city's homes acquired and renovated through the Neighborhood Stabilization Program have been sold, allowing the city to use additional funds for this program. The redevelopment of neighborhoods is extremely complicated and tough work, but it is critically important to the developing of safe neighborhoods. I want to thank City Director Joan Adcock for her desire to focus on this issue in 2014. We need to accelerate the efforts on clearing title to the many properties in our land bank. This is one of my high priorities, and it must be accomplished. Concurrently, we must develop programs and work with organizations that will assist in identifying home buyers and improving their creditworthiness so that redevelopers will know when they build an infill home that there is already a qualified purchaser. Our zoo, I want to tell you a little bit about our zoo. We've got 4 new tiger cubs and a new exhibit area. We have seen excellent capital improvements made at the zoo for our tigers, cheetahs, chimpanzees, and penguins. All of this has been posted, pasted, tweeted, and tweeted by our new communications director, Ben Thielmeyer, who has even rolled out this past weekend a new mobile City of Little Rock app. I hope all of you will pull out your phones after I'm finished and log in onto that new app. Now you can find us everywhere, from Facebook to YouTube, from Twitter to Instagram. Many of these programs and projects have reaped several rewards for the city. Arkansas Business Magazine recently recognized our Felony Reentry Sidewalk Program as the winner in the Workforce Development Agency category. As part of our capital budget, we have dedicated $4.5 million for building sidewalks and are taking individuals recently released from prison and giving them a skill. We have enjoyed good success with this program and have given these folks an opportunity to gain self-esteem and a second chance while getting them off the streets and onto our sidewalks. The redevelopment of Main Street is another example of success. The creative corridor, now comprised of arts and culture, science and technology, has received 7 national, state, and international awards, most recently winning the coveted National Award from the American Institute of Architecture for Regional Urban Design, which will be presented at this June at their convention in Chicago. Now, as important as planning is, implementation is as well. And it seems that there's a new announcement that's forthcoming almost every week downtown. To date, over $76 million in private sector investment is going into the renaissance of Main Street. Projects announced recently completed include the First Exchange Bank building at Capitol in Maine, the Man on Main project housing 19 apartments, several state agencies, and the venerable Bruno's Italian restaurant. The K-Loft apartments in the 300 block are nearing completion, and the Fulk building, now known as Bennett's Military Supply, and Mr. Cool's across the street are going to be renovated. The Boyle building would become a first-class hotel, and the location of the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, Ballet Arkansas, and the expansion of the Arkansas Repertory Theater, along with art galleries, restaurants, and retail stores, with loft apartments being located in the 500 block of Main Street, and with more apartments and commercial spaces being developed in the Hall Davidson building. By 2015, more than 256 apartments will be located on Main Street. The relocation of Orbea's Bicycle North American headquarters in the 100 block of Main Street, capped off by the decision by the Technology Park Board to locate in the Main Street corridor, where the city's $22 million in capital will be leveraged for even more private sector investment, is evidence that Main Street is booming back. All of these efforts and projects contributed to Kiplinger's naming Little Rock in 2013 as the number one most livable city in the United States for a population of 1 million or less. Now, all of that and all of what I've just told you about sounds great, doesn't it? But all is not great in Little Rock. We have many, many challenges that we must face head on if we're truly going to be the next great American city in the South. The health of our community, and especially our young people, continues to be an issue that we must face with urgency. Overall, the news for children under 5 has been encouraging, with national trends indicating a reduction in childhood obesity. Yet, here in Little Rock, the rate of overweight and obese children in Little Rock, especially among our poorest citizens, is alarmingly high. According to the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, male Little Rock District students in grades pre-K through 12th grade increased the BMI rating for overweight and obese students to 38%, while female BMI ratings for overweight and obese female students were 40%. Now, here in the city, we believe we are making some progress, but we must do better. We initiated the Love Your School Childhood Obesity Intervention Program this past year at 7 high-poverty Little Rock School District K-5 elementary schools, and they are showing very positive results. With dozens of volunteers from local colleges and universities, including the ULR School of Nursing, the Chancellor's Leadership Corps, to the University of Central Arkansas Graduate Dietetic Interns, to the UAMS College of Public Health, along with Children's Hospital and the Culinary Institute at Pulaski Tech, we are moving the needle in combating childhood obesity through evidence-based programming and interventions that include students, teaching staff, parents, adjacent neighborhoods, and public policy changes. In fact, in January of this year, the United States Conference of Mayors announced the winners of the 2014 Childhood Obesity Prevention Awards during its 82nd meeting this past January in Washington, D.C. The awards went to cities with outstanding programs that encourage healthy weight through balanced diet choices and regular physical activity. We should be proud because the city of Little Rock was the winner of a $25,000 grant presented for our Love Your School program, Childhood Obesity and Intervention Initiative. With almost 300 raised gardens, cooking classes for parents, walking programs for students, nutrition instruction in the classroom, and nearly $150,000 in USDA grants for fresh fruit and vegetables as snacks for students, The Love Your School program and its volunteer partners are truly making a difference in the lives of almost 3,000 students here in our city. And in our effort to fight hunger in our city, I'm happy to announce that our Love Your School program plans to launch farmers markets at all of the 7 partner school campuses this fall. So that's going to be a lot of fun to see the students selling their vegetables and produce throughout the city. And I want you to know that with these facts in mind, we have worked very hard on a partnership with the City of Little Rock School District to bring balanced and healthy nutrition opportunities to our K through 5th grade elementary schools, and we'll continue to do so by addressing the root causes of academic distress in students, which is poverty, hunger, and environmental stresses that contribute to academic failure and students dropping out of school before graduation. To begin anew this conversation, we have partnered with America's Promise Alliance and special funding provided by AT&T for the purposes of hosting a summit that will allow us to convene community partners and stakeholders to accelerate progress for improving our high school graduation rates and making all young people in our city college and career ready. As your mayor, it is my job to protect and improve our city so that citizens can live and love to the fullest of their desires. As such, I want you to know that in addition to all of the important projects and happenings in our city, we have some real threats to our most livable city. Some of these threats are threats that all cities and urban areas across the nation are experiencing. I would like to highlight a few of these for you, on which I spend a great deal of time and energy. While our wonderful staff under the leadership of City Manager Bruce Moore ensures that the daily operations of city government function, these are issues that threaten our ability to accomplish these everyday activities. I have spent a lot of time with fellow mayors across the country to address threats from, of all institutions, our U.S. Congress, because of inaction and a lack of compromise. Let me first address the issue of tax-exempt municipal bonds. Mayors across the nation are now banding together to express our concern about several proposals being discussed that would either reduce or eliminate the current tax exemption on interest that is earned from tax-exempt municipal bonds. For state and local governments, including school districts, hospitals, sewer commissions, and other issuers of tax-exempt securities, tax-exempt municipal bonds are the most important tool available for financing critical infrastructure projects, such as schools, roads, highways, streets and drainage projects, public power facilities, mass transit projects, and the like. Together, state and local governments are responsible for building and maintaining 75% of the nation's infrastructure, which is financed mostly by tax-exempt municipal bonds. This system of financing has been in place for over 100 years, since the beginning of the federal income tax system in 1913, and has provided state and local governments a low-cost, efficient way to finance infrastructure used by the general public. This is achieved by state and local governments saving up to 2 percentage points on their borrowing rates by issuing tax-exempt municipal bonds to finance local improvements. The proposal recently floated by the Obama administration and certain Republican members of Congress would place a 28% cap or possibly eliminate, with a full exemption, the interest earned on municipal bonds. The impact of such a cap or the outright elimination of the exemption on interest earned from municipal bonds for state and local governments would be absolutely catastrophic. For example, in 2013 alone, state and local governments sold more than 6,600 tax-exempt bond issues that financed over $179 billion worth of infrastructure projects in this country. A recent report by the U.S. Conference of Mayors and the National League of Cities and the National Association of Counties shows that in 2012, if the 28% cap had been in effect on interest earned from tax-exempt municipal bonds, it would have cost state and local governments an additional $173 billion in interest expenses over the last decade alone. And further, the study shows that if tax exemption had been fully eliminated, it would have cost the state and local governments an additional $495 billion over the same period. Where would this money come from? Yes, if you're thinking it's you, the taxpayer, you're right. Or The streets, the hospitals, the renovations, the schools would never be built. To bring this threat a little closer to home, consider this. During the three-year period of 2011 through 2013, approximately $215 million in tax-exempt bonds were sold by the city of Little Rock and other issuers of tax-exempt securities inside the political borders of our community. Assuming an average interest cost of 4% and a loan term of 15 years, residents of our community would have paid an additional $13,765,000 in interest if the 28% cap on tax-exempt interest had been in effect during those last decade of years, and an additional $40 million if the interest deduction had not existed during the last decade. Clearly, the proposal to cap or fully eliminate the interest deduction on tax-exempt bonds issued by state and governments is a threat to a time-tested and successful low-cost financial tool that has served our citizens and the city and the region for over 100 years. Actions like this must be stopped. Both the Democratic administration and the Republican leaders in the House have very clearly stated that this issue is on the table of tax reform. So I'm asking you, as citizens of this city, to join me in opposing this action that penalizes and cripples our ability to finance public infrastructure projects. You, as voters, need to make your voices heard. Let me turn your attention to the issue of marketplace fairness for a moment. Another threat to our city is the continuing inability to collect existing sales taxes on purchases made over the Internet. A recent report by the U.S. Conference of Mayors and others estimated that state and local governments experienced a direct loss of revenue due to uncollected taxes on e-commerce of nearly $12 billion in 2011, rising to almost $14 billion in 2013. The Marketplace Fairness Act, which passed the United States Senate in the early summer of 2013, would permit states and local governments to enforce existing state and local sales and use tax laws on remote retailers so long as they simplify tax administration by adopting the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. Arkansas is a full member of that agreement, by the way. And this bill is, unfortunately, is currently languishing in the U.S. House of Representatives. As an example of the impact on the city of Little Rock, and I know my directors share in this concern, it is estimated that between 2011 and 2013, the city of Little Rock lost over $2,650,000 in sales and use tax revenues that should have been collected, that could be collected. Many of our congressional delegations support the passage of this Marketplace Fairness Act, which is being championed by Congressman Steve Womack from Arkansas's 3rd District. But not all of them champion this particular piece of legislation. So again, I want to ask you to lobby our delegation to take up and pass the Marketplace Fairness Act this year and stem the loss of revenue to the city of Little Rock and the cities across our nation and across our state. It is not a new tax, and it is only fair to our bricks and mortar retailers who provide employment and who follow the law by collecting taxes at the time of purchase. Remote online retailers unfairly have a 5 to 10% competitive advantage by not being required to collect the local taxes owed. Another real threat deals with the area in the area of community resiliency. It's an issue that commands the attention of mayors and public officials across our land, and that is the catastrophic loss of life and property that has occurred over the past 24 months from crude oil shipments by rail, resulting in derailments and subsequent explosions. I have to admit that there isn't a day that passes by when I see a train that's going through Little Rock with oil cars and chemicals that I don't ask myself if we are prepared for the kinds of tragic accidents that have plagued many of our neighbors. Recent fires and explosions in Quebec, Alabama, and North Dakota have reminded all of us that while crude oil shipments by rail increased by over 400% since 2005, our safety policies need to catch up with this new reality of the recent domestic energy boom. And while rail transport remains one of the safest ways to transport goods such as crude oil and ethanol, rail derailments and subsequent explosions have called for national attention to the safety gap and underscores that we can and must do a better job to keep our community safe. Accordingly, I have joined Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, Kansas City Mayor Sly James, and others on the Mayoral Rail Safety Coalition to advance common sense measures we mayors believe are necessary to protect our communities. Also, extreme weather and climate events have long and short-term impacts on local and regional infrastructures. It has an impact on public safety, our natural landscapes, and environmental quality. These events can cost human life, destroy property, damage local infrastructure, jeopardize water quality and availability, lead to energy and food shortages, and disrupt entire economies. Clearly, we know the concern that exists currently in our Maumelle watershed that provides drinking water for 400,000 citizens in central Arkansas. As a local government, we are the ones who act as first responders, preparing in advance for emergency situations, offering immediate assistance to those impacted, and identifying strategies and partnerships and solutions to address situations not only quickly but efficiently. And as a community, we must prepare for extreme weather events and a changing climate by taking a number of important steps now, including studying particular risks and vulnerabilities faced by the community, developing short and long-term plans to address these vulnerabilities, and upgrading facilities and infrastructure to withstand the impacts. By partnering with the private sector, utilities, regional and state agencies, and other stakeholders, we can more efficiently and effectively coordinate our limited financial and technical resources. Congress can help by passing the STRONG Act, which stands for Strengthening the Resiliency of Our Nation on the Ground. Cities need a strong federal government partner and support for improved development and distribution of these relevant educational resources and streamlined processes for funding. People don't need to stand in line and wait to get emergency funding from the federal government. These policies and programs will help our community become more resilient. Transportation is another important area where we have great concern. That's a great threat. Authorizing a new comprehensive federal surface transportation program is absolutely critical with the current MAPS 21 funding set to expire at the end of 2014. Any delay in reauthorization or funding and expected shortfall will be harmful to our local economy. Just last week, the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department shelved the construction of the new bridge to be built near the Arkansas State Fairgrounds. Case in point. Congress must move quickly so that the economy and job growth is not harmed. Also, mayors from across the nation are urging Congress to pass immigration reform. Our nation's broken immigration system hurts families, communities, and our economy here in Little Rock. It is time for Congress to acknowledge the economic vitality that immigrants bring to this nation and adopt a reform policy that supports secure borders and a path to citizenship for the millions of immigrants currently contributing to our local and national economies. Local governments are caught in the middle of this national debate with no control over the regulation of immigration, but we have the responsibility for integrating immigrants into our communities and providing services necessary for stable neighborhoods. Immigrants are also taxpayers and consumers. They pay taxes on wages, and they spend their earnings on the purchase of goods and services, including food, clothing, homes. This increased consumption boosts business sales and expands our economy. It generates new jobs and increases earnings for all Americans. Recognizing this, civic and business leaders, both Republican and Democrat, across the country, have joined with municipal leaders to highlight the economic necessity of comprehensive immigration reform. Again, I urge you to communicate with your congressman to move this issue forward to a successful resolution. And finally, a real threat exists on our streets that commands the attention of every single one of us in this room and every single one in our city. And that is the disproportionate and increasing existence of violence and deaths among young men and boys of color. So far in 2014, very disturbingly, we have experienced 11 homicides. All of the victims are African Americans, 9 males, 82%, and 2 females. So far, all of the suspects arrested have been African American males, 100%. Similar statistics can be found in 2011, 2012, and 2013. The increase in violence and aggravated assaults, including robbery, last year is alarming. This is an issue that all of us need to tackle. The future of our city depends on it. There must be a sense of urgency that swells up from our community if we are going to stop this cancerous disease. The future of our city and nation depends on safe, prosperous communities where everyone has an opportunity to succeed and everyone's life matters. Our highest responsibility is protecting the safety and prosperity of our communities and our people. That means doing everything possible to prevent violence and finding additional ways to allow our young men and boys of color to invest in opportunities which engender self-worth, confidence, and hope about the future. This is why I joined Cities United, which is a coalition of 56 mayors under the leadership of my friends and colleagues, Mayor Michael Nutter, the mayor of Philadelphia, and Mayor Mitch Landrieu of New Orleans. Both cities, as well as our own and many, many others, have experienced an all-too-high rate of violence among African-American young men and boys. Our city's united commitment is to reduce and end the high levels of violence that affect too many African-American men and boys. Our common commitment is to engage the community and to engage with our neighborhoods and the men and boys on the streets to find solutions that end violence. By showing our collective experience and wisdom, this coalition will help us succeed through prevention instead of just prosecution and intervention rather than just incarceration. Why does it matter? Because every 15 days, we lose 435 members of our communities throughout the United States to violence. This is the size of the U.S. Congress. These are lives that could be future leaders, doctors, researchers, entrepreneurs, lawyers, or teachers. The loss is absolutely incalculable. The leading cause of death for African American men and boys aged 16 through 24 is homicide. It is an epidemic. Estimates from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention indicate that in addition to preventing human suffering, cutting violence in half would save our country over $35 billion a year in medical and productivity costs alone. Those resources could go to improve our schools, support our families, the buildings, and building the prosperity that our communities so desperately need. So whether it is your children, your niece or nephews, your students, your employees, or the kids who live on your block, we may not be at fault, but we are all responsible. And we each have a role to play in this effort. Through our collective work, I am confident that we can inspire our city and our nation to prove that out of tragedy can come triumph. To succeed in making communities safer, we must work together. Elected officials, community groups, black men and boys, faith organizations, business and labor groups, educators, the police, health, human services, prosecutors, and the courts, each is a part of the solution and must have a collaborative role in crafting that solution. It is time for us to all take a hard look in the mirror and recognize our own personal responsibility to strengthen our families, to improve our communities, and change the culture of violence. We need everyone on board, every parent and grandparent, every pastor, every coach, every friend, and every neighbor. This violence will not stop until we all get involved. And we have the power to do this and to fix it. There is nothing broken here that cannot be fixed. There is no problem here that cannot be solved. But the challenge of violence is both wide and deep, and it must be addressed broadly as an issue of public health, with close connections to economics, education, poverty, law enforcement, race, and American culture. Here's the point. A lot must change to stop the shooting, to stop the violence. And so it is time for us to marshal every one of our resources, federal, state, local, private, faith-based, not-for-profit, all to turn the tide. And this is very difficult and hard work. Thus, I am calling on our city staff over the next several weeks to inventory all programs in our city, both public, private, and nonprofit, so that we can see the big collective. The city must lead in this effort. We must first do a data assessment of all programs to determine those that are successful and those that are not, to determine those that are evidence-based and those that are not. We must coordinate these programs and identify them in at least these following categories: public health, education, school reading programs, poverty programs. We know that by the age of three, a child born in poverty will hear 30 million less words than a child who is not born in poverty. Employment programs, law enforcement efforts, and faith-based community efforts all need to be identified. I am calling on our preachers to get out of the sanctuary and into the streets to help us identify male role models who will take the time to teach character and self-worth to our young men and boys. At the same time, I'm going to direct our staff to inventory other programs that exist throughout other cities in the country so that they can be examined and considered by us. Such programs as Wraparound Schools, a program in Cincinnati where schools house a variety of support services aimed at helping at-risk kids, everything from health care to hunger, from truancy to counseling. Our schools and teachers know who these at-risk kids are, and we can positively affect change if the children and their issues are identified and addressed at a very young age. We need to seek out other programs and promote our own OK program where at-risk boys learn respect of each other and the police. Programs need to be researched, such as the Eagle Academy for Young Men of Color in the Bronx, where since 2004, over 1,000 current and former students are taught the value of an education, self-worth, and how to become a successful man. We should investigate such programs as the New Orleans Ceasefire District, where neighborhoods, churches, community groups, and law enforcement worked together to reduce the number of homicides occurring in a particular area of town. New Orleans, and this portion of New Orleans, went 156 days without a homicide in this ceasefire district because the community, all of the community, all segments of the community, came together with a common resolve to end violence. And I'm asking our city manager, Bruce Moore, to identify employees in each of our municipal departments to work as a team to build shared ownership and understanding of this issue. With this, I will be creating a city advisory group focusing on young men and boys of color and how we can help. And knowing of Director Ken Richardson's passion for this issue, I'm going to ask him to assist me in assembling a team of committed individuals from all of these various sectors. We have other partners as well. Paralleling our city's United effort is the announcement by President Obama of My Brother's Keeper Initiative, which focuses on the same issues. It is a new presidential initiative to help every boy and young man of color who is willing to work to get ahead. The president has reached out to what are now 10 of America's leading foundations to help fund new initiatives to help young men and boys of color who are facing tough obstacles to stay on the right track to reach their full potential. These 10 foundations include some that have worked with the city, such as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and they are committing an additional $200 million to this effort, along with an already $150 million that is being spent. We, the city of Little Rock, will be working with these foundations and certainly doing everything possible to leverage the $5.5 million annually that we currently invest in this effort. We will develop a youth master plan that is evidence-based and is a call for action. Then we must implement. We must not delay. And so I urge all of you to take action on this matter too. We must reverse the cycle. It matters to all of us. These young people are the future of our city. As Dr. Martin Luther King wrote, we are tied together in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all directly. And finally, this being St. Patrick's Day, let me offer you this. May the good luck be with you wherever you go, and your blessings outnumber the shamrocks that grow. Thank you all for coming today, and may God bless all of you and bless our city. Thank you.